the Royals, as they've done all year long, keep the line moving. Breaking ball, ground ball up the middle. Correa, he misplayed it. The ball goes into center field. Two runs score, and this game is tied. Crowd is alive and well. Bottom of the seventh inning. 3-0. One pitch and a pop up. Right side. And it's going to drop. And it's in the right center. It's going to get loud. Here comes Moustakas. Royals take the lead 4-3.
That's into right field. This ball is gone. Going to third is Kane. Holding at first. Now Kane coming to the plate. Royals lead. He can fly.
Now it's Donaldson. Second and third. Two out. Left side, Moustakas. Royals win the pennant. It is Escobar, and he swings and hits it into left center. Back at the track, it is dropped. Cespedes couldn't make the catch. How about that effort? Digging around third. Here comes Escobar. 1-0 Kansas City. An inside the park home run for Alcides Escobar to start the World Series. Gordon in the air to center. Back at the wall. This game is tied. Into right. Granderson back. Escobar tags. Here comes Escobar. The Royals win game one. Hosmer drives home. In the 14th. Right now, game two belongs to Johnny Cueto. Can he finish what he started? Broken bat, fly ball, right field. How about Cueto? Royals up 2-0.
This could be the crossroads of the 2015 World Series. And a slow roller to second base. Booted by Murphy. Zobrist comes around third to score. Kane ends up at third base. Wow, you talk about giving a game away. Two walks and an error.
Chance to tie it here in the ninth. Runner at third, one out. Broken back. Caught off by White. Throw home. Royals tie the game. Unbelievable base running by Eric Hosmer has tied it. Inside corner. The Royals, 2015 World Champions.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the World Series Champion edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. This is not a joke. It's not a drill, ladies and gentlemen. The Kansas City Royals are world effing champions. They won the World Series. It's over and done with. It's in the history books forever and ever. And we've got a ton to talk about. A ton to talk about. And it's all awesome. It's all great. There's no what ifs. There's nothing. The Royals are it right now. They're the only thing to talk about in baseball because they're world champions. So before we get into all that, the usual stuff, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport. And it's been a hectic, crazy week. Mike and I wanted to wait until it was over to talk so we could obviously we could either be really depressed or we could be like we are now, which is incredibly, incredibly pumped up. Mike, I don't want to speak forward or I don't want to speak for you. Is that an accurate summation of your mood right now?
Pumped up? I think that would be accurate. I would also add relieved.
Yes. Definitely some of that.
I mean, just awesome. Everything's so cool. I mean, it's going to be, this could be a weird show because it's still a little difficult to put into words everything that we just saw in the last week in the World Series, and to like, not just the series itself, which was pretty incredible and fun to watch, no matter how tense, but like everything else to it, like it's one series, and they made a lot of comebacks against the Mets, but it's 30 years of fandom and frustration and a generation of fans learning what a winning team is like, what a championship team is like, and that's something I wasn't sure for a while there that we were ever going to see, even though I knew that this team was very good and that last year's team was very good and the year before that was a better team,
Right.
Even though there was all that progress, it was still one of those things that there's only one team at the end, and it's very difficult to get to that point to play for that distinction, much less to actually pull it off and win it. And the way the Royals did it, from every step of the postseason was just remarkable and entertaining and just wild and crazy and everything. I mean, so many adjectives. I should just get a thesaurus and just rattle them off. It was
because they all apply.
They all apply. It's crazy. It's such a fun spot to be in because I was five when the last World Championship happened and
right.
didn't really know what was going on other than Kansas. The word Kansas was involved because I TV. That was the only connection I had to it. And so this one is a lot different and so much better. And, we're not alone in being excited about
yes.
it. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll get into the particulars here in a bit, but yeah, it is pretty darn special.
Incredibly special. I mean, it's one of those things where, and we'll kind of get to the parade and everything in a bit here, but with you learn, especially because, Mike, you and I are Kansas fans. And so in 08, Kansas won the national title, obviously. So we kind of had a small bit of a taste of kind of what it's like, but we've never seen a professional sports team do it in our lifetime. And with that, it's completely different because, especially here in Kansas City, we have such a weird dynamic with the college sports, KU versus MU and K-State and Iowa State, and everybody else is all in there. So it's just very fragmented in terms of, collegiate rooting, people rooting for what collegiate team they root for. So to see how the city kind of came together for the Royals, and it started last year, obviously, and to see it just go full force because last year at the beginning of the season, there were still doubters, and it took, Ned Yost was criticizing the fans in August of last year when we were in the race for a playoff spot for not showing up, so there was still a little bit of that kind of, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, you saw it last year, so people believed it. And it's true. They call us to Show Me State for a reason, I guess. But they showed, and we believed, and it was full force from day one this year. And when seeing it, kind of just being so close, 90 feet away last year, and then this year being the culmination of all that, being the culmination of, trust the process, of 30 years of basically irrelevance for that entire period, of a new era of Royals baseball, and then kind of to last year, the 90 feet away, just everything, and then to see as a factor of all that, bringing the entire city together, everyone rooting for the Royals, and it became kind of about the city, and the Royals were just kind of a microcosm of the team, of the city, if you will, and then the city was in itself a reflection of the team. So just a fantastic kind of just a whole fantastic confluence of all those things made this just such an amazing experience that, I'm trying the best I can here to put words to it, but it's so difficult because it's just so amazing.
And it's awesome, which I think we already said. But
did we say that? Did we mention that it's awesome?
I think it's pretty awesome.
The kind of KU, the college basketball, college sports thing is, I mean, that's a pretty dividing thing. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, but it does become it, especially when you're talking with other fans who are also Royals fans. And it seems like, hey, we're all Royals fans, let's just get along. But, you know, those are some pretty sharp, you know, boundaries between KU fans and MU fans and things like that. But it really was something where, you know, the Royals this year, they got off to such a hot start, 7-0 right away. And it was pretty much, you know, afterburners on from there. You know, they never really, I didn't look at this, but whenever they took first place, I mean, they had it for 4 months without even looking back at it. You know, it was like they're there and took off, and the city responded. Record ratings on TV, record attendance. I gotta imagine apparel sales were pretty great.
I'm wearing some right now.
Right, yeah. And, you know, with every step that they take in the playoffs, it's even more. And, you know, a second straight pennant and, you know, just so many different things. And there's no way you can't get caught up in it if you're any kind of a sports fan, unless for some reason you hold some kind of strange grudge against the Royals still for who knows what, you know, perceived slight there might be. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there
perhaps,
were some.
Perhaps if you have a grudge for a poor call in a World Series 30 years ago.
Well, yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other matter.
Yes.
The whole Cardinals thing. It's like, okay.
But speaking of which, and not to interrupt you, but one thing that is kind of great too, in this kind of, I don't know if I'd call it a, I don't know what to call it exactly, but it's nice to finally be able to lay 85 to rest, if that makes sense. Like, obviously, we're never going to completely just dismiss 85, of course, because it was such a great, you know, first championship, such a great team, and all the legends of Royals lore. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to get at is this is the new Royals lore, the new legends, you know, all the new things that we don't have to keep referencing. You know, as a Chiefs fan, you know, it's getting further and further and further away from the one championship they won 46 years ago. And, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, there's no connection to that, besides Lynn Dawson doing the sports broadcasts on the radio for the Chiefs games, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like there's a real connection. And you still feel that connection to 85 because it's somewhat recent, and George Brett's always around and Frank White's always around. But, you know, as the years go on and on, that would get further apart, obviously, not only in time, but just in feeling. You know, the connection with that team would slowly dissipate as the citizens of the city are people that, like myself, who had no real connection to him. I didn't grow up watching George Brett and Frank White like my dad did, you know, but so it's really cool to now have that, you know. So when, you know, my daughter, who was going to be born in a few months, you know, when she, if she takes an interest in baseball and asks me questions, you know, I'll be able to say I lived it, to have that look in my eye that my dad has when he talks about 85. So, you know, obviously I'm not trying to say get rid of the 85, all that kind of stuff, but it's just nice to have new things to talk about that aren't parody, that's not Ken Harvey and a thing of tarp or nailing somebody in the face trying to throw home. You know, it's nice to have things that are talking about that are legitimately good. You know, Salvador Perez hitting a 12th inning ball down the third base side to win the first playoff game in 29 years, and all the comebacks and all the, you know, sweeping their way to the World Series in 2014 and battling in 2015. And it's just like, you know, it's so great to have that new era of Royals. That's, you know, obviously last year was we knew it was for real, but now it's kind of, it's in the history books now. So that's so cool, I think.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, I mean, we've talked about it before, projection systems and analysts and magazines and where they predicted the Royals, and some had them as low as 72 wins is the famous Pecota projection now. I guess infamous is a better term for that. and so many different people, you know, so many different writers and such thought that this team was going to be like third place team, maybe second place. And, you know, the Royals, they never thought that. I mean, they never really thought that last year was a fluke, even though they kind of snuck into the playoffs, kind of. And, you know, were six outs from being out of it completely in the wild card game. They came back, they swept the ALDS, they swept the ALCS, and they were 90 feet away. And that was kind of the thing, you know, 90 feet, you know, that last 90 feet to tie game seven last year. And, you know, for whatever intangible it provided, I think that really did bring a lot of those guys out to where, you know, they were more focused this year. They got that little taste of it and really wanted more and wanted to finish it off. I mean, unfinished business was one theme all season. I don't know. I mean, it's nice to have a second title to go along with 85 because 85 is always going to have that, you know, asterisk for good or not, you know, even though, you know, it's very easy to explain that, okay, that one call didn't make that big of a difference.
Right.
In the grand scheme of it all, that's still what a lot of people remember. And that's still someone, there were articles about Dankinger during this World Series and different things that kept coming up about it.
I mean, the Royals embrace it because when they had the 30-year anniversary earlier this year to get together, they invited him. They invited Dinkinger to the thing, and he came.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not something – I mean, the Royals are – I mean, of course they're going to be aware, but, you know, you would think normally an organization would kind of try and poo-poo it and just be like, no, we won because we were better. But they almost kind of embrace it at this point.
Well, they were better. I mean, they won the series. But
well, I mean, but I'm saying they – sure. You know, you would try and present that angle – versus
even acknowledging, you know, bringing the question up.
Yeah, you would just kind of ignore it, I would think. But yeah, Royals do things differently, as we know.
They sure do. And, you know, then when you get to this year, even though, you know, a lot of people thought that we're a fluke, you get to that stage where, you know, I talked about this all the time. I was so anxious through all the playoffs, and I think it was because last year they made it, and that was enough. And the rest was just like a bonus until where it was in sight that they might actually win the World Series. And then it was like, okay, now pretty nervous. But this time, you know, when you finish with the best record in your league, you're expected to get through the first round. You're expected to go to the World Series. And, you know, that's scary because then it's like you don't want to end up in the same spot. Like, let's say the Royals went to game seven this year and lost the last game by one run with a guy stranded at third, you know, exact same circumstances. The way it would feel would be much different. It would feel much more, I think, like a disappointment that second time than the first time, because there's a little bit of an extra, I guess, the experience from the first time, you know, being just a, hey, we're here, versus having actual expectations to win that last game. And so, you know, during the Houston series, I mean, they lose the first game, and that's just immediately like big red warning signs and stuff of just being, you know, anxious, because it's like, that's a best of five. You know, that's a tough hole to get out of right away, even though it's one game. And then they make that comeback, but they still had the next day. They still had to win game five, and that was a tense one because, you know, the Astros got a home run in the second inning. And so there's more tension. And then you have to play the Blue Jays, and they're just like the least – like the last team I wanted to see. And yes, for good reason. I mean, it was – there are so many spots in those games that the Blue Jays could have just turned it on and you know, ended up – blowing through the Royals, but they didn't. It didn't end up happening. And so once they made the World Series, then, you know, the whole thing is the narrative of, oh, well, they've got these great starters and they're going to shut the Royals down and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like can't they just like award it to us and not even play the game? Because it was just so tense at every step of it. Even, I mean, the Royals didn't help things by trailing in every game just about, you know, and by more than one run in many cases, which is part of, you know, the comebacks are kind of what makes it that much more of a thing. Just because, I mean, go, you know, they had like 11 wins in the regular season where they came back from two or more runs behind, and they did it like seven times in this postseason.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. And they did it against guys like David Price, and they did it against, you know, Juris Familia and, you know, some significantly talented pitchers. So, with all of that being said, it's just like, it's almost like a storybook kind of finish. It's just like the team that's never out of it, the team that never gives up, the team that always finds a way. You know, you get a blooper to fall in, you get a fan pulls a home run in, you get the weird like mirror image of Sal Perez driving in Christian Colon, and then Christian Colon driving in the guy who pinch ran for Sal Perez, and they're both, you know, winning plays in this team's franchise, you know, this postseason lore. It's just, I don't know. It's crazy. It's almost like it was scripted and it just worked out perfectly.
And I even mentioned this on Twitter before the World Series, but there were so many iconic moments in this postseason, and there were even more in the World Series. Because, like, when you think about, you know, Royals playoff history, you've got, you know, George Brett's home run off Goose Gossage, right? Was that 83?
1980.
80, okay.
I mean,
yeah,
he got him in 83 for the Pine Jar game, too, but...
Right. I was thinking the playoff ones. 80 was the one, because then that was they finally broke through, beat the Yankees, get to the World Series.
Yep.
And then, I mean, honestly, the only other iconic moments you can really think of is the Dinkinger call at first and Motley catching the last ball, last out. I mean, you know, I mean, there's obviously a few other moments, you know, if you're a big fan that you can remember, but for it's kind of like as far as like a national consciousness, if anybody thinks of the Royals, that's kind of all that they really see and all that they think of. And that's really all that they show when it comes to highlights of the 85 World Series. And then you see George Brett and Saberhagen
on the mound.
Yeah.
That's what you see.
But that's kind of it. And then, you know, and last year it was, you know, there was more. There was the, you know, Lorenzo Cain making those two catches against the Orioles and the, obviously, Salvador Perez throwing his hands up in the air after lacing that ball down third base side, and scoring or hitting the winning run. But I mean, this season you had, in game five of the ALDS when Kendrys Morales sealed the deal basically with that three-run homer, and then starts skipping down to first base. I mean, that was as huge of a moment as you could imagine. I mean, you had, and some of them were kind of the reverse Dinkinger type where it's iconic bad in a bad way for the other team, you know, Correa missing that ball, the sure double play ball also hit by Morales. And then you go to the divisions or the ALCS against the Blue Jays. And like you said, that was so intense because the Blue Jays are so, like, I felt relieved playing the Mets, if for no other reason, because the Blue Jays are the scariest team I've ever seen. And I don't care if it was the Cubs, if it was the Dodgers, if it was the Mets, Cardinals, whoever it was, did not matter from the other side, because there was no line. And I'm not saying that it was just, I was thinking it was an automatic win, but there's no lineup in baseball that's as scary as the Blue Jays. Cause as you said, at any point they can just boom, just snap you off and then it's done. You know, I mean, they won, was it game five? Was it, they won 7-1 or whatever, you know, I mean, they can break off the runs and make you look silly real quickly. So that was scary. And then, but you still had those iconic moments. The Lorenzo Cain scoring from first on a single and sliding into home plate and then jumping up immediately.
That was my favorite call of
yes,
the whole postseason, and it was Joe Buck's call. So that's almost sacrilegious in this game. But that it was great.
My favorite,
the surprise when he realizes that Kane's not stopping,
and then he scores. It's such a big.
He starts talking about Hosmer in at first, and then all of a sudden he's back, and Kane didn't stop.
Yeah,
and he can fly. You know, I mean.
Yeah, it's like that is awesome. I love that call. Great.
That was my favorite moment. I think my favorite call though was, and it's kind of weird to have it on an error, but that error on Correa. Like I can't remember who the guy is. They always have him on the. Who was the God? I'm blanking on that. Who
Excursion?
Was that made the, yeah, that they. And it gets past Correa and the game is tied. Like that was just so cool. Like, and that's the one that they play every time they show the clip too. And it's just great. Cause he gets so excited and you can feel it because it's just a genuine, like, oh my God, that just happened.
You don't expect it. It's another one that I liked was in game 4 where Hosmer hit that chopper to Murphy, and Denny's call of it was, you know, he's calling it like a, you know, it looks like it's going to be a routine 4-3, and he's just like, and he boots it. It's like, just crazy. So many.
Yeah, and then Alex Gordon hitting a home run off of one of the best closers in baseball in the bottom of the ninth inning in game 1 of the World Series with one out to tie the game, and Joe Buck, another good call, just kind of, because it didn't look like it didn't look like a ball hit as hard as it didn't look like he hit it as hard as it went far. You know what I mean? That's kind of a weird way of putting it, but it just kind of kept going, and it was like, oh man. And so I think Joe Buck kind of thought of it the same way, and then he just kind of, and this game is tied, you know, just like, oh man, so many great moments and all the great comebacks. And to kind of go back to one of your earlier points talking about, you know, expectations for the season. Like, obviously, the expectation was they wanted to win the World Series and finish what they started. But from a realistic standpoint, I think you started the season and it was, you know, kind of like that article that Hosmer wrote that they released a few weeks ago. We're not a fluke. That was kind of point one statement. This is what we want to say. This is what we want to prove, that we're not a fluke. And then they go and they win 7 games out of the chute. Statement made. You're not a fluke. Forced to be reckoned with. Top 5 team in all the power rankings. And they never left it. They never left the top 5 after that point, really. I mean, maybe for like a week or two in September when they were really, really, when they were struggling. But for all intents and purposes, they were a top 5 team and probably top 3 for the entire season. So statement was made, done. And then I think once you get past that, then it's like, okay, we made the statement. We know we're good. We're going to win the division. We're going to the playoffs. And then it became, we got to finish what we didn't finish last year. So you make the trades for Zobrist and Cueto. And then all of a sudden the expectations are no longer like last year where we're happy to be here. Everything else is gravy. It's if you don't make it even to the World Series, it's a disappointment. And it's still a disappointment if you make it to the World Series and lose. And, you know, I mean, that's the, when you make it to the World Series, that's what happens. That's where the expectations go. So that's what they were dealing with. And I was super relieved, obviously, when they beat the Blue Jays. It's like, okay, you know, now you can feel good. Everyone can feel good about the season. They made it back to the World Series. Win or lose, you can still feel good about what you accomplished. Because anytime you make the World Series, just like the Mets should feel, you know, you feel good. That's an amazing season, no matter what. Don't ever let anybody take that away from anything, because you make the World Series, win or lose, it's incredible.
Yep.
And it then, counts. Yes, it does. You're in the books. The fact that the Royals went back and won, I mean, it's just that they were able to finish it. And God, you think in last year, I mean, Mike, you and I were at Kelly's watching that game 7. You felt it coming. You know, it wasn't a gut punch loss. It was just like someone slowly twisting a knife into you as you bled out.
About as soon as Bumgarner came out of the bullpen.
Yeah, you knew.
It was like, I mean,
the final, was it 5 2/3 innings or whatever he pitched? And it was just like, there's nothing they can do. Which, as an aside, obviously the Royals are a lot better this year than they were last year. But seeing what the Royals did this year makes it all the more impressive what Bumgarner did last year. To give even additional credit where it's not needed, because he gets plenty of credit anyway. But it still makes that so impressive. But that whole five innings, I mean, we were just kind of like, man, this is it. It's just, how is this happening? It's just going to slowly die. And finally, you know, you can kind of wash that away now with this, and it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to take a break here for a minute, and then have a little commercial, and we've got a special guest to bring with us when we come back on the other side. So stick with us, and we'll come back and we will talk more Royals World Series champions when we get back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
I need two claps and a Ric Flair. I said I need two claps and a Ric Flair.
The Vault.
Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
Back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. And I told you right before that we'd have a special guest when we got on the other side, and we do. Folks, the prodigal son has returned via Skype. The former namesake of the show when it was back when it was the Royal Man Report, and the guy who brought us all together, the man, the myth, the legend, Troy Olson. Troy, calling from New Mexico. How the hell are you doing, man? It's been a while.
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fantastic, man. The Royals just won the World Series, so we're all feeling pretty good right now. So Mike and I kind of rambled, man. So give your thoughts, man.
I'm good at this whole rambling thing. So I was going through my time hop because I like time hop. It's kind of fun to look back once in a while and see where you were a year ago. And, you know, about a week ago we were talking about losing the Royals lost the World Series to the Giants because Mad Bum was sent down from somewhere upon high and just did bad things to us. And so we were kind of sad, but kind of happy that we got that far and didn't know what this year was going to include. And I had a message in my phone that of Mike trying to send me where he was that night after the game. And he like sent me a picture of a whole lot of lights. And he goes, I don't think that helped much. And it really didn't, but eventually I found him and we recorded an episode. And so it's kind of fitting that here we are a year later and it's time to do this again. And it was definitely special. It's harder, I think, for those of us that are away for life reasons, you know, because you can't enjoy the fun. You can't go to Kelly's and be with your friends. And you know, you're just sitting there and having to thank God for Twitter, you know, cause you're just trying to live through Twitter and, you know, go on with everything that's going. And I actually have to admit something that during that final game, thank God for my wife, because I dozed off. We had put down one of our animals the night before. Ugh. And it was unexpected. And we had to deal with that. And unfortunately, she was having trouble sleeping just because she was still sad and stuff. And I had been watching the game intently on my computer on Roku. And so the delay was about 2-3 minutes. So her phone had alerted her of the Cologne hit. And she made sure that I was awake. She says, something's going to happen. Or she says, you need to make sure you're watching TV. That's what she said, and not sleeping. And so she woke me up just in time to start the rally. And then we got up and went out to the living room and watched it on our cable box, which we have limited channels. But thankfully, we had regular TV, which Fox is part of. And so we went out and watched the game. And I don't think I got as excited or you know, there wasn't tears. Like, she'd been giving me a hard time because she had sent me a text at one point saying, I'm going to make sure I record the entire playoffs so I catch all the tears. Because my wife is – we are definitely a role reversal. She's definitely more the guy in the relationship. I'm definitely more the girl, as that I'm more emotional and stuff like that. And especially when it comes to the Royals at this point in our lives, because I think we've just – especially the three of us, when I say we, I'm talking about the three of us, you know, I think we've all experienced so much with this team, and especially doing this show. You know, I remember Jeff saying, if I'm doing this show 5 years from now, back when we started doing it, I hope we're making lots of money. Well, we're not making lots of money, but it's been almost 5 years since we started doing this already. And who would have thought that when we started that, you know, I joked about this last year, that episode 2 of this show was nothing but talking about Bruce Chen's start the night before, because I didn't know how to move on from a topic. And we talked a lot about Bruce Chen in the second episode.
I think we literally just talked about Bruce Chen for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And Mike goes, we got to do something different next time. Yeah. I said, okay.
It's like, I can't talk about Bruce Chen for an hour.
But the most ridiculous thing is that now 2 years in a row, quite possibly, and Rusty Kuntz, if you watch the Fox broadcast, Rusty Kuntz was talking about this with Eric Hosmer at first on how big a part of this team Christian Cologne's been, with 2 hits going back to the wild card game last year and then this year in game five, you know, what he's done. And then for us, for Mike and I, that's a big deal, because Christian was the first person we ever interviewed. He was episode 1. We started this show on the day we started it because I lined up Christian Cologne and Mike and I were able to get together at the Ice House at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studios in Kansas City.
We had Christian. We can find that show, because I one of the things I asked him was, would you rather be the guy who scores the game-winning run or gets the game-winning hit? And he's done both now, which is awesome.
I hope that – I think I have it. I mean, I made several copies of it, and I think I've copied it to 3 places. One was my former work computer, which I no longer have. So sure. That's a difficulty, but I'm going to go through and try to find that this weekend and hopefully get that up by Monday if I can find it. But yeah, I sat there for those final 3 outs and you just watched it. And I'm trying to be a little bit quiet because my sister-in-law and nephew live with us. And so trying to enjoy it, but it was, I mean, we were up by 5 and there was just no doubt. When have we ever been a Royals fan where, you know, they were up by 5 and you're like, yeah, this game's over. There's no chance that this is going to fall apart. There's no chance. They're not going to be roiling today. They're going to win this. We're going to win the World Series. And that's what I'm sitting out there in the middle of New Mexico. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this, and it's, you know, the 12th inning and it's 10 o'clock our time or whatever at that point. And just watching that and thinking, you know, it was going to be over, but there wasn't anything to get sappy about, because it wasn't like the wild card game where we won it, you know, and it was there. Mm-hmm. Or game 7 of the World Series last year, where the Royals had it, you know, the 90 feet away, and Sal pops up. And I still can't believe he was the MVP of the World Series. That just blows my mind. And you go from him, you know, essentially losing it. All he needs is a base hit to tie the game a year ago. And this year they consider him the MVP. And so it's kind of a crazy thing how much difference a year makes, and that we're talking about this. I remember trying to pitch this show to sponsors, and everybody talking about, well, the Royals just aren't good enough to talk about. They're not good enough to sponsor. And here we are 4 years later, and the Royals are the number one team in the world when it comes to baseball.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, we started this show. We've done this show longer than Eric Hosmer's been in the big leagues. By like 2 months.
So true.
We interviewed Hosmer and Moustakas. Well, I interviewed Hosmer and Moustakas at Blog to the K and put it on this show. You know, the day that Hosmer passed Moustakas and got called up, and then Moose was up here. I think it must have been a preseason thing or something, or for some reason they were both up, or maybe I had talked to him in Omaha. I don't remember, but I remember asking him about, you know, did it hurt him that he was passed, you know, by his teammate? And he talked about how much friends they were, and you wondered how much of it was baseball talk. And now you look at this team now, and there was no baseball talk. That's who they are. You know,
that's
two claps and a Ric Flair.
Two claps and a Ric Flair.
Two claps and a Ric Flair.
I have to say, I love Jeremy Guthrie. May not have been always been the best pitcher, and we've talked a lot about how the whole locker room captain thing doesn't matter for having a good baseball team. It only matters when you're a good baseball team. It doesn't make you a good baseball team. There's some argument that maybe it does when you look at what this team has done, but that whole two claps and a Ric Flair is such a clever thing and such a neat way to bring your team together, and I love that.
It's fitting for this team.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the head there, Troy. Like the having a locker room leader, a Jeremy Guthrie or a Raul Ibanez last year or a Johnny Gomes or whoever, you know, doesn't make you a good team. But when you are a good team, it can certainly help. You know, I mean, there's some teams that they don't need it. You know, the Dodgers have been in the playoffs the last couple of years, and they're a good team. And, you know, by all accounts, you hear their locker room is kind of divided, kind of mess, you know, and you got to wonder what's really going on there by the fact that Zach Greinke opted out of his contract today to kind of
straight cash, homie.
Yeah,
I think that's just a money thing. I don't think it matters any more than that. But, you know, maybe they do need a Jeremy Guthrie. Maybe that's what that team's missing. Maybe that's what's kept them from becoming that next step and making it to the World Series, because they're missing something. And Don Mattingly wasn't the problem. And if anybody thinks that, I got some oceanfront property in Nebraska for you. Because Don Mattingly, you're not going to see anything different with this team until they get a guy, unless he wasn't a coach that could take control of the locker room. But a lot of coaches aren't. Even in AAA, that was one thing that Glenn Allen Hill talked about, that he doesn't go in the clubhouse very much. He has an office just outside of it. He goes in there, you know, and occasionally he'll give them a pep up speech or whatever, and then they go rattle off 4 or 5 wins. But he didn't like going in there because that was the players' area, and the players were supposed to, you know, have that area to talk amongst themselves and whatever else. And I think that is what the Dodgers are missing. They're missing that. They're a great team, and they're missing that guy that really puts them over the top and pulls it all together, because right now they can't figure that out.
Yeah, and you talk about Mattingly not being the problem, and unless it's something where he can't get a hold of that locker room. And I think that can bring us to Ned Yost, who we haven't really talked about yet on this show, but we've been kind of incrementally giving him more and more credit as the season goes on. And, you know, when people like us, we've talked to, you know, both on the show and off, people around the Royals that are very close to the Royals, that have been in the locker room, that have seen the players and the way they interact and the way they interact with the coaching staff and everything else. And, you know, one of the questions I've always had is, you know, you hear about Ned Yost and how he fights for his players and he's a player manager and they love him and all this stuff. And it's like, is that actually true? And the answer is always yes, absolutely. They love him. They will do anything for him in the locker room. He's very straightforward with his players. He's very, you know, that is one of the things that take away the tactical decisions. And then the second part of being a manager is kind of owning, if you will, that locker room, being able to control it, getting those players to fight for you and believe in you. Ned Yost is there's very few that are better at it than him. And when you have a team, and it was kind of a learning process for him to learn to loosen up the reins a little bit as far as the tactical decisions go and as far as micromanaging different aspects of the play on the field. But then, you know, once he kind of reached that point, which was, I think, kind of towards the end of last year, he was finally able to get a happy medium there. But that's been the biggest part of, I think, Ned Yost's impact on this team and the success he had is the way he's been able to foster such a good locker room with all these different, and a lot of it is goes back to Dayton Moore as well, getting the right players that are going to fit in that locker room. But then once you can have a guy like Yost who can, as Johnny Gomes said in the speeches at the parade, who can steer the ship and people believe in him, they trust him, they regardless, and I do think this is, you know, you try not to pay too much attention to these kind of nebulous things that you can't quantify, or at least we have tried on this show. But as many people have stated in different articles and things written recently, the Royals kind of make you question all that. And, you know, the Royals players, regardless of whether or not we think as, you know, average Joe podcasters, regardless of whether we think what Ned Yost is doing is tactically smart, whatever he does, the players believe in him and thereby kind of reinforces a belief in their self, I think. So I do think a lot of that, you know, never say die, we can do this no matter what, like that kind of attitude that they had that propelled them through the playoffs, I think that's a factor of Ned Yost and having trust in him that they know, hey, we've got our manager behind us, we know what we're doing, we can do this, we're all on the same page here, we believe in each other, and that kind of, you know, that is an important part of their success, and all the players say it. And so I think that's where you kind of have to give the most credit to Yost. And it's just Mike and I have talked about it on the show throughout the season. It's been phenomenal to see the growth, not only of the players, but of the organization, because Dayton Moore and Ned Yost have changed how they manage, how they operate as a franchise. And you've seen the results on the field.
It is so hard for me to say nice things about Ned Yost.
Hey,
it hurts my soul.
You're talking to me right here. That's so Ned Yost. I've been saying good stuff about Dayton Moore all season. And that's, I mean, I never thought that I'd be the guy singing Dayton Moore praises. But
see,
but
and I are. Always liked Dayton Moore and JJ Piccolo because they were such nice guys. And I remember Mike actually told me once, I don't care if they're nice guys, they need a win. And I agreed with that. You know, I wanted Dayton Moore to do well because he was a good guy, but I never thought he'd last as long. But the first thing I said to a friend of mine who was on Twitter at Tim N Thin, TimNThen, when he first heard about the signing, he asked me, he goes, what do you think of the Ned Yost signing? I said, it's the worst thing they could have done. Could they not find somebody better? I did not like Ned Yost. I have never been a fan. I think he's a great person. I think the fact that he hunts is cool, blah, blah, blah. But I have never liked him as a coach. And I just that his job in Milwaukee said everything I needed to know, that he could not win in the playoffs. That's all I needed to know. And I never believed in Ned Yost. And it was actually Tim, who's a Mets fan, ironically enough, that came back to me this year and said, now how do you feel about Ned Yost? And I said, it hurts my soul to say good things about him, but I have no choice.
Well, with everybody, like just about everybody on this roster, top to bottom, you can pretty much point to like a low point that they had to evolve from. Like Yost, you know, he gets fired like a week before the season when they're in the wild card spot. And
they were leading the division. He had lost the division. That's why he got fired, was because they were losing the division and we're going to have to go in as the wild card.
It's just crazy. And then, you know, you get to a point last year where he starts to kind of ease up on how he's going to use his bullpen. He uses his best guys more liberally, which is what everybody wanted. Dayton Moore has changed to be more open to analytics, and they have one of the bigger analytics departments in baseball now, but nobody knows it because, you know, old narratives die hard. And Mike Moustakas made it to the minors last year, and Eric Hosmer only had 9 home runs last year, and Sal Perez has had a knee injury, and Wade Davis was a bust as a starter, and Danny Duffy's had surgery, and Jordana Ventura got into fights, and Johnny Cueto, and all this stuff. You know, everybody kind of sorted it out and bounced back, and all together in this season, they all kind of came together and went on this crazy run, and it's just like, it's just that's the coolest part is, you know, you get to see this group of guys that we've kind of followed from 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, all the rookies and stuff. And, you know, they're a part of this. And then the guys that you brought in, and you signed Volquez and Morales and Madsen and Chris Young, and those guys are a part of it. And then you bring in Zobrist and Cueto in midseason. And it's just like it all comes together and it all worked. And I think there's got to be something to the coaching staff, not just Ned, but, you know, Rusty and Gershley and Dave Island and Dale Swaim and even Pedro Grifol. You know, those guys, I mean, they did a lot of things right from like a scouting tactical standpoint, but I think it worked a lot with just the players and to get them into positions where they could succeed, where they could, you know, do their thing. You know, Yost hardly ever puts a bunt sign on. That's usually his own guy, you know, the guy at the plate making that decision because he's worked to a point where he trusts him to do it. I think that's where I think you can kind of soften on guys like Yost and Moore who, you know, for a long time, I wanted them both gone too, because it was taking so long. It was such a long process to get to where they put a winner on the field and, you know, the Will Myers trade. Now I think we call it the Wade Davis trade, you know, just signing Jeff Francoeur. Well, that even worked out to a point in some ways, and just all these weird moves that didn't look right. And they ended up working, and doesn't necessarily mean that they were the right moves at the time. I think, you know, there's still, you have to judge it in that context of the moment, but it's still a pretty big deal that, you know, you can come back from a low point and end up, you know, turning things around into where now you're world champions. And it's like, that's probably the funnest part because in 2010, it didn't seem like that was going to ever happen.
No. And
when
and
we started this show, we were just trying to figure out we were talking about the if club. We were always part of the if club. If this happened and that happened and this happened, we might get within three or four games of the Tigers and, or the White Sox and have a shot at the wild card. But we needed like 45 ifs to come into place.
Yeah, and I think that's been the funnest part for me and the part that makes me more hopeful about the future. And we're not going to talk too much about the future on this particular show, but just that – and, Mike, I think we kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago, but the fact that it's not just – you know, sometimes you get into a situation where you kind of luck out, if you will, and you amass the right amount of talent. And whoever happens to be the coach and the GM at the time just kind of reap the benefits of having these good players that they just happen to get at the right time, you know. And
it's
you
like
see
the Miami Heat a couple years ago.
Yeah, and you see it, you know, a lot of different times.
Like,
you
anyone know? Could coach that team.
Yeah, and so those things do kind of happen, and coaches and managers and GMs will look better than maybe they actually are. So. But the way this Royals team is developed and the way that you can tell the manager and the GM have changed their philosophies to suit this team and to better suit building a team and an organization and a culture going forward is it's really fantastic. And it makes me really excited about the future of this franchise beyond 2015, just because we know it's not that kind of fluke thing where all the players matured and got good and had a really good season at the same time. There's an evolution there to get to this point, and we all saw it, and it was a fascinating thing to see, and it's looking really good going forward. And I just want to it's kind of funny that you talked about, you know, back when it was being in the IF club and everything, and that was to kind of bring this full circle just for me personally. When I first started writing for you, Mike, for Kings of Kauffman, when my first article that I sent you as my tryout, if you will, was about all the prospects. I don't know if you remember, but it was about all the prospects, and because Baseball America had just come out with their big thing, you know, with Royals' best farm system ever. And so I wrote this thing up. I saw there was an opening. I sent it to you. And we kind of went back and forth, and then you finally brought me on. And then it was, you know, 1 week Troy couldn't make it. Somebody else, can anybody else host? And I was the guy that spoke up. And then the rest is history. 5 years later, we're talking about a world championship. I mean, it's just, it's so insane that it literally, I mean, you could go back to that moment whenever Baseball America dropped that thing, and you could probably just kind of put a pin in that and say, if you were to tie a string from beginning to the championship, that's where you would begin, pretty much. Because that's when everyone's ears started perking up, because it wasn't, oh man, this Colt Griffin kid's going to be pretty good. It wasn't, hey, this Chris Lubanski kid might be something.
Oh God.
You know, it was more than that. It felt real.
There was legitimacy to it.
Yeah. It felt way more real than it did in years past. But yeah, that list from Baseball America, that didn't even include your Salvador Perez's, your Yordano Venturas of the world. And it was still supposed to be this huge thing. And I mean, you can go down that list and you can check it off. And with the exception of maybe Chris Dwyer, every single one of those nine players that were in that top 100 best ever has made an impact on this team. Hosmer Moustakas, obviously,
right
there on the field play. Will Myers, the big trade to get James Shields and Wade Davis. Danny Duffy on the roster made some huge relief innings in the World Series and throughout the playoffs, and he started for most of the year.
Because I want to say something about Danny Duffy while you're on him. That guy was a true believer, and don't think that all this, Royal for Barry Royal or whatever, that was fake. That was Danny, because when I had a chance to meet him back here in Albuquerque when he was on a rehab start, and we went to Applebee's to have dinner, and we talked about a lot of stuff, a lot that I won't go into because it was in trust, but I sat in my car, and I looked him in the face, and I said, we're never going to win with Dayton Moore, Danny. I just don't see how we're ever going to win. And he says, trust me, it's coming, it's going to happen. And I remember saying, I hope you're right. He believed, and I mean, you can go back to when he was here, you can look it up when he was hurt. I can't remember what year that was, but I mean, shoot, that's been about 3 years, and he already knew back then that this team was going to figure it out. And maybe it was just because he's a guy that believes in the positive or whatever, but he believed in Dayton and Ned back then. He truly believed they were the right guys to get us there. And now look, you know, a couple of years later, and look at the memories that we all have.
Yeah, and he started, last year for the most part, and was great. Once he kind of got back into the groove, so he's been a big part of it too. And continuing down that list, Jeff, guys like Mike Montgomery, part of that Will Myers trade as well. Jake Odorizzi also in that group. Even John Lamb, a guy who we traded to get Johnny Cueto. So it just continues to go from all of those players who are not only the core in the minor leagues, and all those guys basically won championships in their minor leagues every level, but they come up here and they're either on the team or they're, somebody who the Royals traded to, benefit the team today. And even if it's indirectly, like guys like Odorizzi and Montgomery,
John
and
Lamb,
such.
And
yeah, I mean, it's like they never really did. Like Odorizzi is the only of those of Lamb, Montgomery, and Odorizzi. Odorizzi is the only one who actually appeared as a Royal in the big leagues, and even that was two September starts. And
that Greinke trade just kept on giving.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean that's a huge deal too. It's just like, the way this team comes together is just crazy how it ends up fitting. Guys you could easily overlook, like Lorenzo Cain, who was a good minor league prospect, but nobody really expected him to be what he is now, which is a top five MVP candidate. Otherworldly player with every facet of his game in check. And, Alex Gordon back in 2010, in the minors. I mean, he's a Triple-A all-star because they kept him there to learn the outfield, which he did, and won every Gold Glove since. And it's just like, I mean, there's so many storylines and so many great players that did something, at some point to change their game, to adjust. Mike Moustakas hit to the opposite field and had a career year. It's just remarkable to like look at these players. Some of them we followed for years as prospects. Some of them have been in the league a while, and it was just the right mix. It's really rewarding to kind of like follow a team that you like so much, and then they have success. Like they were fun to watch in 2011 and 2013 and stuff, still a fun group, but to win this year in the way that they won
and knowing all those backstories, it's just like that made it so much fun. It was probably the funnest year in sports I've had as a fan of any sport. Arguably one of the best Royals teams ever. I think so many people say some of those late 70s teams were the best, but this one won the title. And, yeah. You know, that's pretty significant. And so
but
much
the best Royals teams don't win the title. We found that out. 85, Brett will tell you, 85 was not the best team.
Oh, they weren't. And, remember George Brett?
He said that in many interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he straight up said after the game, they said, who would win this 15 team against the 85 team? He said, oh, they'd beat us.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
So, and I absolutely, really I completely agree. I don't think that's just him trying to trump up. But, you know, and I think we've kind of talked about going the whole full circle thing. And I think that's what's so why this team, this city has connected with the team so much. And it feels so great because, you know, a lot of Royals fandom kind of, I don't know that you want to say, I don't know if I'll say died, you know, but kind of tapered off, certainly. And then it had to be watered. It had to be cared for. It had to regrow after all the pain, all the losing and everything else. And as that Royals fandom started to regrow, then it kind of all coincided with the growth of these prospects. So in a way, even fans that had been fans forever but were tired of putting up with all the losing, you know, they kind of regrew their fandom, and it all happened together. So everyone was learning how to be a fan of a good team again, starting in, you know, 2010, 2011, 2012, until they finally started winning in 2013. And it was the same deal with you know, Ned Yost learning how to become a manager who can succeed in the playoffs and who can win a division, and Dayton Moore learning how to run a team from top to bottom, you know, bottom of the minors all the way to the major leagues, to where you can have a consistent philosophy but still give freedoms to the players. And then, you know, the players learning that they can take instruction from different coaches and what instruction to take and how to internalize that and how to make themselves better players. And it all kind of made this feeling of family. And you had teams like or players that came from the outside, you know, and I feel like maybe right field is kind of the kind of bastard child of it, because between Nori Aoki last year and Alex Rios, they've never really felt kind of part of that. But those are the only examples I can think of, because you look at like Kendrys Morales, I mean, he fit in from day one, it seemed, you know. And, you know, Ben Zobrist coming in and Volquez coming in. I mean, Volquez, you know, really feels, these guys feel like Royals, and that's kind of the new Royals, if you will, that you're going forward. And that's what Dayton Moore was talking about way at the beginning when he talked about establishing a culture. And it is what the good teams do. You know, you look at, you know, we bring up St. Louis a lot because they're a very well-run organization, and they have that kind of next man up, bring these guys in, and, you know, you fit into the Cardinal way, which isn't to say it's some sort of rigid thing that everyone must do things a certain way, but it's the culture, it's buying in, and now there's a Royal way, and people are going to try and emulate it, and they're not going to be able to, because it's not just in statistical analysis, it's not just in these numbers and what you see on the field. There's way more to it than that. And you get Ned Yost and you get Dayton Moore, and they deserve all the credit in the world for establishing that. And that's part of kind of what I was alluding to earlier that makes me just really excited for, you know, that this wasn't, as Eric Hosmer said in his article, they're not just a fluke. They're going to be here for a few more years, and hopefully way longer than that.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing, too, is you're talking about the new, you know, there was always the Cardinal way. Well, the Royals way is what we were kind of hit on earlier, that the right people in the right spots and the right chemistry and, you know, everything that we've always said didn't have enough statistical meaning to matter is now what everybody is biting onto, that it really does matter that you have to have the right guys. But, you know, you're talking about the outfield a bit, and it kind of, I was so, of course, I didn't get a watch parade because I was at work, and I went back and watched bits and pieces of it, and I saw Johnny Gomes' speech, you know, where he talks about they beat the Cy Young, and they beat the Rookie of the Year, and they beat the MVP. But did anybody else think it was kind of odd that a guy that's been on this team for, what, 6 weeks was the guy that was out there, you know, saying how much, quote-unquote, we did? I mean, I get it. I love it. I love the, you know, and maybe he'll be back next year. That'd be cool. I think he could be a good part of this team. But it just, it felt odd that he was the guy with the mic, you know, in all this, when he's probably got about the least amount of tenure on this team.
Did he say we, though? Like, I remember a lot of it.
Yeah, he was saying we beat him. We beat him, stuff like that.
He did say a lot of they, too. He did say a lot of these guys, those guys.
These guys behind me, what they did, you know, what those boys did, a lot of that kind of stuff. So, I mean.
That's true.
He probably, okay.
It is kind of weird, but I also think he was one, probably, I mean, he's just his personality is just that vocal type of guy.
But,
and so it led to some of that. But,
I mean, let's be honest, that's why they got him. I mean, Dayton Moore knew that's the kind of guy that he was. And similar to Raul Ibanez, you know, you knew Johnny Gomes wasn't going to give you much. And they didn't really need to pick him up. But he wanted that kind of that piece of it. And so he went out and got it. And, you know, I mean, that's what Johnny Gomes was there for. So it is a little weird that he kind of had the most prominent speech, given that he literally did basically nothing.
Man, if you're gonna do it though,
yeah, freaking.
I like those points though, that, you know, he's talking about the Cy Young Award winner and the Rookie of the Year and the MVP, and it's like, yeah, the Royals don't really have any of those, and yet they're on that stage with that trophy because it was, you know, nine guys in the lineup, and it's, you know, 1 through 9, and it's that was their attack in the postseason. You just keep the line moving was the slogan that popped up. And that's what it was. And, you know, you can't find a better example of a pitching staff really making it work, and not necessarily four starters. It's, you know, it was like, okay, we want to get these pitchers through the lineup twice and see how they are that third time. And then we're going to the bullpen. And it's like this unit. It's not like, all right, we're going to get 7 from this guy and then, you know, chip in here. It was just like, you know, it's whatever it took, in whatever combination that it took. And when you look at like World Series MVP, you probably could have picked 5 or 6 guys who could have been deserving of that. It could have been Luke Hochaver, who didn't allow anything through the whole World Series. It could have been Ben Zobrist, who had a good World Series. It could have been Alex Gordon, who had the biggest hit of the World Series. It could have been, Eric Hosmer, who had some of the biggest RBIs, or it could have been Sal, who had the most hits. I mean, any of those guys, and I think that's where you end up with this team that beat this group of Mets who, you know, were touted by everybody as having this stable of starting pitchers who were going to shut down the Royals, and it just didn't work out that way because it's still a team sport comprised of individuals, and you've got to keep that line moving like the Royals did, and it just ended up, it just made it that much more special to me to watch these guys, you know, come together and go through everything and, you know, defy the projections and the odds and everything. They weren't favored for a single game in the World Series, and they won 4 out of 5.
Stephen A. Smith said he just couldn't see how the World Series was going to go past 5 games because the Royals couldn't handle the Mets starting pitching.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk, Mike, about the just being the consummate team. I mean, baseball is basically an individual sport masquerading as a team sport, you know, and because it's everything is individual battles, you know.
Yep.
But the Royals proved that you need to have that team element to win. And as I was talking about earlier in the show, I think Troy, this might have been before you came on with us, but the Royals and Kansas City right now have this kind of just really incredibly tight relationship. And it's, I think, like, because it is that sort of symbiotic, and the Royals are a reflection of the city and the city is a reflection of the Royals. And just as the Royals are this amazing, you know, consummate team of no superstar, but everyone playing their part, you saw a little bit of that, or I should say a lot of that, with this parade they had recently. I mean, both, you know, Troy, obviously, unfortunately, you weren't able to make it being in New Mexico, but Mike and I were both there. And I mean, it was absolutely insane. It was so amazing. The whole city came together, quite literally, the whole city. I mean, the Kansas City proper, obviously the metro area is a little over 2 million people, but Kansas City proper has 470,000 people in it. There were 800,000 people in like a 20-block radius. Yes.
And those pictures are just insane.
They're amazing.
Those pictures are just incredible.
They're absolutely amazing. I mean, never seen anything like it. The biggest celebration in the state of Missouri, which includes, by the way, 11 championships from the Cardinals guys that have never had a celebration this big. But, you know, it's just so crazy to see that. And it was so amazing. Like, you know, everyone, obviously people are going to have little stories. You know, some people, you know, oh, this didn't go that well, all that kind of stuff. And there's, I'll say this to get it out of the way, there's no effective way to plan for 300,000 people, half a million people, especially not 800,000 people, especially not on 48 days notice, which for some reason the MLB requires it in 48 days. Someone brought up to me that I think...
Or 48 hours. Because
of, or 40, I'm sorry, 48 hours, yes.
48 days would still be difficult, too.
Yeah, it would still be difficult. But somebody brought up that maybe it's because of free agency, because they can't have contact with free agents for the quiet period, and that has something to do with that. I don't know. But regardless, they have to have it so quickly, very little time to plan, and that massive amount of people is impossible to plan for, really. And then that's what the mayor said, and he's right. So, you know, yeah, it sucked, and some of it was really, really frustrating. I myself had a scenario that I won't get into that was kind of frustrating. But, you know, beyond all of that, like, it was so amazing because the 98% of the time, it was just great fans having fun with each other, being amazing, loving Kansas City, loving the Royals, cheering like crazy, watching the clips that they've showed the entire last inning of Game 5 of the World Series. They had montage videos. They had, you know, they showed the parade. They had interviews. I mean, all of it. Everyone was just amazing. It was so great. I've lived here my whole life. I love Kansas City so much. It's always going to be my favorite city. It's always going to be my city. And to see that happen, you know, and be a part of it, I mean, it was an experience that I'll never forget. And just the fact that it was at the culmination of a Royals World Series, I mean, it's just like, there's, what can you say? I mean, it renders one speechless. And, you know, what if I can try and sum into words, it's just that my wife, often, she's not a huge sports fan, and she kind of laughs at how much I like sports. And then sometimes, you know, whether it's the Chiefs or the Royals or whoever has a, you know, particularly disheartening loss, she'll just kind of give me one of those, you know, why do you keep doing this to yourself? You know, you get so upset, you know, you'd be so much happier if you just didn't care so much. And I'm like, you know, she says, why do you keep doing this? And you know, sometimes I have an answer, sometimes I don't. But after seeing that parade, I absolutely have an answer now. I mean, for all the relative meaningless of sports in the context of real life, you know, there's a greatness in sports there. And when it can bring a city together and people together like it did for that parade, you really see it. And it's never in doubt now. As much as sports can hurt and as much painful as it's been for my entire life as a Royals fan, it's all worth it, and it was all amazing for that parade.
Three things off of what Jeff said. My wife actually at one point told me that if I didn't watch sport, I'd be a much happier person. And she's probably right.
Probably true.
Probably. Yeah.
And it almost always revolved around the Royals, and this is probably right after we moved out here. So that gives you kind of about 3.5 years ago or so. Second thing was, and yes, this is a pat on my own back, but I preached. And, Mike, I think you can back me up on this. I preached back when I was on 810 with three guys in a garage, who is Jay Binkley, who's now on whatever, Drive Time or whatever they call it, on 610. I was preaching back then that they needed to try Hochaver as a setup man or a closer because he could be the next Todd Van Poppel. And I preached that on this podcast, too. And now you look back, and it's probably the only thing I've ever done right in scouting in my whole life. But it was just there. You knew that he had it for a couple innings. He just wasn't a starter. And Todd Van Poppel was the same way. He never had it as a starter, but he was a darn good reliever for Oakland back in the 90s. And I am so glad they figured it out with Hochaver. Second thing is, first off, that the whole downtown thing, it is what it is. If you didn't know that there was going to be problems going into that, then you're out of your mind. There's no way that a city like Kansas City could have supported what that was. Jeff once said, when he was the football guy, he said, and we recorded proof of this from the interview on Fox, that if the Royals ever got good, we would see the true baseball town that Kansas City is, even before this team was going to the World Series. And of course, it came on quick, but last year, as this team started to get good, it's not a matter of bandwagon fans. When this team was playing 500 baseball, the crowds were there. The audience was getting excited. Yes, school nights were still hard, and yes, we took some hits on that from people in other parts where the team was competitive and we looked like the Rays. Yes, that was there. But this has always been a baseball town. There's a baseball logo on one of the I think it's the interchange between I-35 and I-25. There's a baseball logo out there that's been there since the 70s or 80s. And it belongs there because that is a baseball town. The Chiefs are great, don't get me wrong, but it's not a football town. Yes, they have maybe sold out a lot more than the Royals have, but that is a baseball town. And I truly believe that even if the Chiefs win the World Series, I don't know that the turnout would be as good as what you saw this last week. That is a baseball town, and I was so glad to see it come back to life. I did not grow up in Kansas City. I grew up in Nebraska. I spent the majority of my life, still to this, the majority of my life has been spent in Nebraska. I was born in Nebraska, but I'm from Kansas City. And I have told people that the whole time. When people ask me, so where are you from? That's exactly how I say it. I was born in Nebraska, but I am from Kansas City. Even though I spent 7 years of my adult life, that's where I got married the first time, that's where I did a lot of my college initially, it was in Colorado. I don't consider Colorado home. I don't miss Denver nearly as much as I miss Kansas City. If Kansas City was 8 hours away, I would spend a lot more time there than I even dream of going to Denver for. I could get to Denver if I wanted. But if it was Kansas City instead of Denver that was just 8 hours north from here, I would be spending a lot more time in KC than I would ever dream of spending in Denver, because KC is home, and it always will be. So, no, I don't have that tie where I can say, yes, I was born there, and I've lived my whole life. And, yes, I was a Royals fan growing up, but I did live in Denver for 7 years, and we're talking the 80s and 90s, guys. There wasn't internet. I couldn't follow the Royals closely in the 80s and 90s.
You've got the newspaper.
I'm a baseball fan until 5. Yeah, I mean, but what's a box score? What's a box score in the Rocky Mountain News or the Denver Post? What does that tell me when you're 10 years old and you don't really understand stats? I was an eye test guy until after I met you guys. You got to remember that. When we started this show, I was all about the eye test. I didn't understand advanced stats. I still don't understand most of it. I like war. That's one I can understand and I can grab to, and I get it. I've started to understand FIP, you know. But I'm an eye test guy. You know, I sent you an email earlier today that said I'm worried about giving – Alex Gordon a 5-year, $100 million contract or a 5-year, $80 million contract because the eye test says that he can't do in 3 years what he's doing today. And you told me that that may not be the case because he's Alex Gordon and he's more fit than any person on this planet. But, you know, and that's for a different show, a different day.
Right.
But
not untrue.
It's hard for me to think that it scares me that what might happen with the Alex Gordon contract, but you tell me that the stats tell me otherwise, that you can't always trust the eye test. And that's why, you know, again, maybe a pat on the back, but the three of us always made a good show, and adding Cameron for the humor part of it. And he's a great baseball guy too. You know, that's what made us really good back when it was four of us, is that we've always loved this sport and we love this team. And yes, I was, you know, maybe even if you only want to say I've been a fan for 10 years, you know, about the time that I got moved back to Kansas City, fine, I'll take that. But I was there for some bad years, and I was there in tights and a cape for some really bad years, for some really wet games, you know, in rain and everything else, dressing up as Elvis for Elvis Lookalike Day on a Cleveland Indians team where there were 10,000 people and it rained delayed for 2 hours. You know, those are the memories I have of the Royals. And I am so proud to say that I was there when this team was bad, because it is so cool to see this team now. And, you know, I wouldn't even be able to attend the Royals games that I did back then because I wouldn't be able to afford it, which is fine. If you get it, you sacrifice. Either you get to go to a lot of baseball, or you have to miss some, but your team gets to be really good. You get to choose. And that's the choice in life, and it is a business. And I applaud David Glass for everything he's done the last 3 years. He has spent the money, and, you know, that was a conversation on Twitter already, is what does Glass do now, because he's got that taste. And, you know, again, we're not talking a lot about the future, but I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out and spends a buttload of money this offseason and even takes a bit of a loss the next couple of years until TV contract comes up. This, I think he's a different guy. He's a different owner than we had 5 years ago, but he trusted Dayton Moore far more than any of us did. And if you don't think he's paying Dayton Moore a lot of money, you're crazy.
I just remember back in 1990, I bought these two newsstand magazines and they were like, you know, baseball preview, whatever. The Royals had just signed Mark Davis and they signed Storm Davis and they had George Brett and they had Bo Jackson and they had finished second in the AL West the season before. And everybody, both of these magazines and everybody else I could, you know, find on newspapers, Wichita and Kansas City and the Hayes Daily News in my hometown, USA Today. They all said the Royals were going to go to the World Series. And I thought, sweet, this is awesome. And then they didn't do it. And I thought, well, I can wait. And I waited a long time. And to finally get to that point now where they are world champions in this kind of period now where there's so much information and so many other fans you can connect with, I think that's kind of the coolest thing. Because back when I was 10 years old in 1990, I guess it would have been 9 going into the season, but you know, it wasn't like that. It was, you know, the friends on the schoolyard and kids on your baseball team. And that was it. That was kind of all you had. And if those guys were A's fans, you were screwed. And so to get to that point now where there's so many people to connect with, I mean, in the last 5 years of blogging and podcasting, I've met you guys. I've met so many other fans, you know, just here and there. Kambler and Dave Lesky, who we bring up all the time, and Craig Brown, some of the really good guys on Royals Twitter, and even Kambler on Royals Twitter and podcasts and all that stuff. And to just kind of like share it with everybody, that's the coolest part. You know, that's the part where, you know, you run into someone and you give them a high five and you talk about how cool that 2015 season was. And that's going to be another part of it. So those are my final thoughts on the Royals, the World Series, fandom, all that stuff. Also, the parade was crazy. Just crazy. Yes. And that's all I got. So I think we can put this one to bed here.
Yeah, that'll. I think that kind of sums it up. We've all kind of given our last final thoughts on an amazing, amazing run. The Kansas City Royals are the 2015 World Champions, World Series Champions. I've got the gear, the shirts. I'm wearing one right now to prove it. It's real. It happened. And it'll be forever that way. Can never take it away from anybody on that team.
Flags fly world champion. Forever.
Flags fly forever. And they got two more coming next year. And it's going to be super awkward for the Mets in game one when they raise those flags. But we've got plenty of offseason to talk about. Just kind of a preview of things to come. We heard today Alex Gordon opted out of his player option for the contract. So he's officially a free agent. He can sign anywhere starting Friday, I believe. Ben Zobrist.
I think they still give him a qualifying offer. I think they can still offer that to him.
Right.
Which he will probably decline as well. But
yeah,
if he accepted it, it would have been more money than his option.
Yes. And then if he signs somewhere else, the Royals get a draft pick. Unless, but then, you know, Ben Zobrist, Johnny Cueto gone. So, I mean, there's plenty of things to talk about. And free agents, possible trades, winter meetings. I mean, GM meetings are like next week, and then winter meetings are usually around the first week-ish of December. So, I mean, we'll have plenty of things to talk about in the offseason. And as we have for the last 5 years, we'll be going all offseason. You know, sometimes things happen, and we don't always get a show out every week, but we try our damnedest to get them out for you. And you know, once again, we've been saying it all season, but thanks to everybody who listens. Thank you guys so much. I feel like we don't say it enough, but absolutely thank you to everyone who's listened, who made the show. Kelly's Westport for being a great sponsor for the last, basically since we started, and for all you guys listening and being part of the community and coming out to Kelly's with us and watching games and being on Twitter with us and everything. I mean, this, you know, all the players were wearing the Thank You Kansas City shirts for the parade, and it's been so much about the fans, and it's been so great to have this kind of central part to have at least some sort of impact on the fandom for the Royals. So thank you so much for all being a part of it, and stick with us. We got, just like the Royals, we got plenty more to come. We're going to be here all off season. It's going to be a fun one. Your Kansas City Royals are the world champions, and for the next 365 days, that's going to be the way it is. They're the best team in baseball. So thanks for listening all season. Stay tuned for the next few months. It's going to be awesome. Everybody's feeling great. Royals are world champions. So thanks for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.